Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 21, Text Number 18. Handhyam Adrir Avala Hari Dasvaryo. Yadrama Krishna Charana Sparasha Paramada. Manam tanoti sahago yaneos tayoriyat. Paniya suya vasa kandra kandamulai. Antayam madri rabbala. Hanta. Oh, I am this Adri hill, Abala, O friends, Haridas Varya, the best among the servants of the Lord. Yat, because Rama Krishna Charana of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and Balaram. Sparas, by the touch. Pramoda, jubilant. Manam, respect. Tanoti, offers. Saha, with. Go Ganai, the cows, calves, and cowherd boys. Tayo, to them, Sri Krishna and Balaram. Yat, because. Paniya, with drinking water. Suyavas, very soft grass. Kandara, caves. Kanda mulai, and edible roots. Translation. Of all the devotees, this Govardhan hill is the best. Oh my friends, this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends with all kinds of necessities. Water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers and vegetables. In this way the hill offers respects to the Lord. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. Purport. This translation is quoted from Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita Majjalila 1834. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains the opulence of Govardhan Hill as follows. Paniya refers to the fragrant, cool water from the Govardhan waterfalls, which Krishna and Balaram drink and use to wash their feet and mouths. Govardhan also offers other beverages such as honey, mango juice and pilu juice. Suyavas indicates durva grass used to make the religious offering of arga. Govardhan also has grass that is fragrant, soft, and conducive to the strong growth of cows and increased production of milk. Thus, this grass is used for feeding the transcendental herds. Kandara refers to the caves where Krishna, Balaram, and their friends play, sit, and lie down. These caves give pleasure when the weather is too hot or too cold, or when it is raining. Govardhan also features soft roots for eating, jewels for ornamenting the body, flat places for sitting, and lamps and mirrors in the form of smooth stones, glistening water, and other natural substances. I'll read the translation again. Of all the devotees, this Govardhan hill is the best. By my friends, this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows and cowherd friends, with all kinds of necessities. Water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers and vegetables. In this way the hill offers respects to the Lord. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan hill appears very jubilant. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we sum up the principal teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says that the ultimate goal of life is to develop pure love of God, or Krishna Prema. And he describes that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless narration about the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and about the process of devotional service whereby one can develop pure love of God. And he says that the pastimes, the mood of the gopis of Vrindavan, that is the best example, the highest mood of pure transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord, and that the land of Krishna is as worshipable as the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. These are the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we find that by offering these teachings, he is giving the ultimate conclusion in spiritual life, and all other conclusions, all other goals and philosophical realizations, spiritual realizations, are subordinate to this. There are four principal sampradayas which teach the Vaishnava philosophy. And outside, if one actually wants to know about the spiritual world, one has to accept teachings from one of those four Vaishnava sampradayas. Outside of those four Vaishnava sampradayas, there is speculative knowledge, there is impersonal Mayavadi philosophy, there is materialism. But if one wants spiritual knowledge, one actually has to accept knowledge from within those four sampradayas. So, Yamaraj, who's the superintendent of death, deals out the punishment to all the living entities. He states that the religious principles, practices, religious principles, they can only be enacted by the Personality of Godhead. He says that they are very difficult to understand and very confidential. And even those great rishis in the higher heavenly planets and the demigods, even Lord Brahma, they cannot understand. What to speak of others, siddhas, charanas and ordinary human beings. So he describes that actually But there are 12 Mahajans, but they can understand. So in other words, the Mahajans, they have received knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So even the great, you know, greatest personalities, rishis, greatest of demigods, they actually, even if they're situated in the pure mode of goodness, they cannot understand, fully comprehend religious principles unless they're given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even, you know, the Mahajans. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead has empowered these 12 Mahajans to understand what are religious principles. So ultimately, religious principles are understood or enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they are then passed on to empowered personalities who are capable of understanding those religious principles, and then they disseminate those religious principles. And there are four principal sampradayas who are actually teaching those different principles, religious principles. There's the one sampradaya coming from Lakshmi, the Sri Sampradaya, whose acharya was Ramanujacharya. And then there's the sampradaya coming from Lord Shiva, whose acharya is Vishnu Swami. There is a disciplic succession coming from the four Kumaras, whose acharya is Nimbarkacharya, and there is the disciplic succession coming from Lord Brahma, whose acharya is Madhvacharya, whose disappearance day it is today. So actually in the Padma Purana there is a statement that if one receives a mantra which is not given by one of the four Vaishnava Sampradayas, that mantra is useless. It will have no effect. So we can understand that real transcendental knowledge, to receive transcendental knowledge, transcendental mantras, to be trained up in spiritual life, one must take shelter of one of these four Vaishnava Sampradayas. So, at the present moment, these sampradayas, Prabhupada mentions that they are protecting, they are maintaining the religious principles and protecting the innocent people from being harassed by atheists and rascals. That is the, you know, so they maintain these pure religious principles, and pure religious principles is actually called Bhagavad Dham or Sanatan Dham. The real religious principles is actually Bhagavad Dham, Sanatan Dham, and as Yamaraj states, that religious principle, the ultimate religious principle, is devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is beginning or prominent with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So that's the ultimate religious principle. This is coming from Yamaraj, who is also one of the Mahajans. This is taught by all the Mahajans. This is taught by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is taught by all the Vaishnava Sampradayas. There is no real difference. So, you know, out of those Sampradayas, then you will get Mayavad philosophy that is teaching, you know, a completely different thing, that, you know, there is no Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, there is no devotional service, and and chanting the holy name, which is a process of devotional service, is something perhaps in the mode of goodness, a form of meditation that may, you know, help you to become God, ultimately, or enter into the void or something. So, or, you know, outside of these sampradayas, you know, people are not even following any religious principles, and therefore, because there's no spiritual understanding, they're just totally materialistic and involved in just sense gratification in the material world. But ultimately, if one actually wants to, get a spiritual education, spiritual enlightenment, liberation, understand, return to the spiritual world, one actually has to take shelter of one of these four sampradayas. So within these sampradayas, if we look at the state of the sampradayas, as I was asking, you know, Banuswami when he was here, you know, apart from, you know, our sampradaya, there's not a lot happening. You know, there's certainly, you know, there's some things happening, but at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, there was probably more. You know, the, for instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually, for each of the sampradayas, you know, he noted the, you know, the best points of those sampradayas, and he glorified each of those sampradayas for their, you know, contribution. He glorified the Madhva sampradaya for their refutation of the Mayavad philosophy, and their their acceptance of the form of the Lord as, you know, supreme. So, you know, these are very significant teachings. The Sri Sampradaya, you know, there he glorified them for their worship of Vaishnavas, which is a very, you know, a wonderful theme running through their teachings. You see the teachings of Ramanujacharya, you know, very he was very you know, strong on that point of serving the Vaishnavas to please the Lord, and also, you know, the you know, worshipping devotional service in spontaneous love. So each of the different sampradayas were glorified for particular aspects. But the, you know, during, with the advent of Kali Yuga, the sampradayas, you know, you know, some of their activities have become a little watered down. You know, the and changed. You know, the Brahma sampradaya descending from Madhva, they worship Vishnu, Narayan. I think mostly they worship Sita Ram. I think also the Sri Sampradaya. You know, a lot of them worship Ram these days, the various sampradayas. You know, some of them worship Vishnu, Narayan. Their understanding of you know, the pastimes of Krishna, especially the, you know, you know, when you get into some of the more elevated rasas, you know, parental ras and you know, conjugal ras, they don't have a lot of emphasis or appreciation, teachings, you know, that's not their goal, not their, you know, their understanding. So really only within this you know, sampradaya, which is now, you know, descending from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is this teachings of Radha Krishna really being kept alive, you know, in its full glory. Apart from that, it is you know, quite rare even amongst the various sampradayas. Even when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present, he approached the members of the Madhva sampradaya, and he had discussions with them. And we call ourselves the Gaudiya Vaishnavas in order to, you know, slightly differentiate ourselves from the Tattvavadis, who are the followers, the true followers of Madhvacharya. So although we're in the same disciplic succession, they call themselves Tattvavadis and we call ourselves Gaudiya Vaishnavas. it is, Prabhupada describes, Acharyas described that it is an appropriate name because it pays due respect to Madhvacharya, whose teachings, you know, are very prominent, you know, within our philosophy to a certain point. And he had another name, which was Sri Gauda Purananda. So Gauda. So we call ourselves Gaudiya. We're actually, it's also referring to the fact that we're following Madhvacharya. And we also call ourselves Gaudiya Vaishnavas because, you know, that part of India, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, in Bengal, that was known as Gaudiya, Gaudiya Desh, as Pancha Gaudiya Desh. There were five different divisions there. I think somewhere from the southern side of the Himalayas to the northern side of the Vindhya Hills is called Gaudiya. So in that way we are called Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And also originally the capital of Bengal was called Gaudapura, and later became known as Mayapura. So for various different reasons, you know, we are called Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and that pays due respect to our, you know, previous acharyas. But at the same time, there is a slight distinguishing between ourselves and the Tattvavadis, who are the, you know, followers of Madhvacharya's philosophy, but perhaps don't pay as much attention to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually discussed with the Tattvavadis, and you know, he asked them what was the ultimate goal of life, and you know, and they were more for pleasing, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, Vishnu, by you know, diligently following the Varnashram system. You know, practicing Vaishnavism, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and diligently following, you know, the Varnashram system. And in that way, one achieves the liberation of going back to Vaikuntha Loka. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu differed slightly, saying that actually the goal of life is not liberation, but there is a fifth goal, which is beyond the four, you know, goals of the Vedas, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and that is pure love of God, Krishna, Krishna Prema. That the devotees, therefore Lord Chaitanya says, Nādanam nājanam nāsundaram kavitam vabhigirishikāme māma janmanishvare bhavatadbhakti hatiki chayi. That, you know, birth after birth, he is just desiring devotional service. It doesn't matter whether they go back to, they attain liberation or not, they're only asking for pure devotional service and nothing more. Just the opportunity to serve the Lord, and not asking for any personal favours. So they're not striving particularly just for their own personal liberation, but they're actually striving to serve the Lord in pure devotional service. And he also differed in that, you know, the process to achieve that, and the prominent activity of a Vaishnava, is not following the Varnashram system, although that is important, but the principal activities of the Vaishnavas are hearing, chanting, remembering, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, the nine processes of devotional service. That these are the actual prominent activities. So, you know, in this way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his teachings were the next stage of understanding in our sampradaya. In fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings literally brought together all the teachings of the various four sampradayas, because since time immemorial, you know, Vaishnavas and even non-devotee philosophers have been, you know, grappling with the question of, you know, what philosophy actually properly describes the absolute truth. You know, is everything one? Everything, you know, God is one, everything is one. And, you know, we have the sort of Mayavadi philosophy that, you know, Kevala Dvaita, you know, exclusive monism. Or, you know, is it a dual philosophy? You know, that there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then there is his manifestation, including the living entities and the material world, like that, you know, which is Dvaita. So there is the, you know, this is prominent in the teachings of Madhvacharya, Sudha Dvaita or pure dualism. So therefore you see, you know, Madhvacara sitting like this. There's two. You know, everything is not one, there's two. So he, in the teachings of Madhvacharya, you know, he very strongly distinguishes between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in doing that, he strongly refutes the Mayavad philosophy that the living entity Supreme Lord, or the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Brahman, is one. So he strongly refutes that, and he shows many differences. there is the Mukta Tattva Vali, or the Pearl Necklace of Truths, by Madhvacharya, which is, you know, Madhvacharya asks that we string that around our neck, because you know, it very strongly refutes and the arguments of the Mayavadis. He goes through so many of their various arguments, you know, and he describes he reveals that you know, the Vaishnavas, they understand the statements of the Vedas by, you know, reflecting also with the statements of the Smriti, or the Puranas. So, you know, by understanding Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, you know, then you can understand the statements of the Vedas. If you don't take into consideration these literatures, you know, Narada, Pancharatra, and what have you, then you cannot understand, you know, the Vedic statements, especially because, you know, Bhagavad Gita is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, and Srimad Bhagavatam is a discussion with many, you know, spiritual conversations by the Mahajans themselves. So without taking into consideration these very in-depth discussions by the Lord himself and the Mahajans who represent him, the Bhagavats, you know, one cannot properly understand the Vedas. The Vedas also have to be understood in full. If we take, for instance, you know, if someone walks into the room, they hear part of a conversation, and then they walk out and they say, "Oh, I heard so and so saying such and such." You know, you pick up part of a conversation, you can completely misrepresent and misunderstand what that person was saying. You have to take in the full conversation, and even if there are some doubts, even if you're standing with a person, you still perhaps should question. Maybe if you know that person a little bit, after some time you can pick up the mood of what they're saying as well. So just to, you know, the understand the Vedas is very much like that. They have to be studied completely, fully, you know, and from all angles of vision for a long time, you know, and picking up the mood of the Vedas as well, and then one can speak about the Vedas. Otherwise, one is bound to make mistakes, as the Mayavadis do. And one should also accept the Vedas with their direct interpretations, and not like the Mayavadis, who say that, you know, a lot of it is allegorical, and therefore we should give secondary meanings in order to, you know, bring out the real hidden meaning. But actually, you know, the Vedas should be accepted directly, unless sometimes it is stated that this is allegorical. So Madhvacharya points out, you know, many of the different differences, as is pointed out by the Vedas themselves, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is stated in the Vedas to be the maintainer of all living entities, whereas the Jiva is never stated to be the maintainer of all living entities. He is the maintainer. There are innumerable living entities who are maintained by the one Absolute Supreme Lord, and he is maintaining others. So that is the distinction made by the Vedas. It doesn't say that they are both the maintainer. The Vedas also describe that the, you know, Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-knowing. The Jiva is not. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is all-knowing within, you know, everywhere throughout his creation, material and spiritual, within the heart of every living entity. But this, the ordinary spirit soul, he only has consciousness within his own body. And, you know, a lot of the Mayavadi teachings also are contradictory. For instance, you know, if everything is one, in other words, there is a spiritual existence, Brahman, but it has no variety, therefore they say everything within the material world is illusion, which means that the Vedas are illusion, which means that the Varnashram Dham system is illusion, Therefore, their own philosophy, which is supposed to be based on the Vedas, refutes the Vedas as having any authority. You know, if you follow the Mayavada philosophy, that means you have to reject the Vedas as illusion. So, but their Vedas, their teaching is supposed to be based on the Vedas. So therefore we have to reject Mayavada philosophy as well. And therefore, that is why Mayavada philosophy is actually called covered Buddhism, because the Buddhists openly, you know, reject the Vedas. The Vedas are not, you know, everything is a void, therefore the Vedas are ultimately illusion, everything here is illusion, should be rejected. Mayavadis, they're actually saying the same thing, but in a hidden way, like that. So that in one sense they're more dangerous than the Buddhist philosophy, who openly rejects the Vedas, like this. So in this way, you know, Madhvacharya, he points out many, many defects in the, you know, teachings of the Mayavadis, the impersonalists. He breaks down every single one of their, you know, points, you know, bit by bit. In fact, they sometimes call themselves Vedantists. You know, the Mayavadis call themselves Vedantists, and the Vaishnavas, you know, there is another meaning of Vedanta. Vedanta also means without teeth, and it is described that these acharyas, they smash the teeth of the Mayavadis. You know, the teeth are like their arguments, they smash their teeth. So yes, they are toothless. All their arguments have been broken like this by the strong arguments of the Vaishnava acharyas like Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya. So in that way they are Vedantas, but otherwise not. So this is so Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimakacharya, they very, very strongly, you know, established the, you know, that the supreme, the real truth of the Vedas, and one should, they had commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra, whereby they established, you know, either, you know, pure dualism, or, you know, Ramanujacharya, qualified oneness, Visishtadvaita. Visishtadvaita means, you know, yes, everything is one, but there is a qualification to that. It is one with variety. So that is, you know, the philosophy. So, you know, there is like this, and then there is, I think, Nimbarkacharya might have been, you know, oneness and duality and dualism. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave a Achinchabhedavadi tattva. See? So he is saying, yes, you're all correct. If you're proposing the philosophy of, you know, qualified oneness, or, you know, oneness, yes, it is one. And if you are giving the philosophy that, no, it is two, dualism, yes, it is two. You're all correct. But it is more than that, it is both. It is oneness and difference, dualism, at the same time. Although this is inconceivable, but that is the nature of transcendence. That is. So this is the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which actually, you know, gives the final conclusion, which makes all the Vaishnavas happy. He's not refuting anyone. He's actually just adding the final touch. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is giving this, you know, teachings of that the Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Love of God is the ultimate goal of life, pure love of God. The best example of that pure love of God can be found in the gopis of Vrindavan. The land of Vrindavan is as worshipable as the Lord. Like this, Srimad Bhagavatam is a spotless narration of the pastimes and you know, the process of devotional service. So this is the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is the final conclusion. So therefore, you know, because of Lord Chaitanya, when we sit and we can sit and understand when we're reading these pastimes, that this is the ultimate activity for the Vaishnavas And by doing this, they achieve the ultimate destination of Krishna Loka. So otherwise, without the blessings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and also without the blessings of Madhvacharya, who defeated many of the impersonalists, otherwise we would be sitting here, studying some Mayavad philosophy, if it wasn't actually for these acharyas. If we at all wanted to get out of the spiritual, the material world, and took up some, spiritual activity, we would actually be now sitting here taking up Mayavad philosophy. And instead of, taking prasadam and, hearing the glories, the wonderful pastimes of Krishna, associating with Vaishnavas, dancing, chanting, like this, worshipping the deities and, doing so many wonderful, just joyous activities. While meditating on Krishna, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, what we would be doing? We'd be studying some dry philosophy. We'd be decrying Krishna as, we'd be rejecting Krishna, we'd be rejecting Bhagavad Gita, rejecting Srimad Bhagavatam. We'd be trying to find some secluded place somewhere, and sitting in silent meditation, meditating, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Like this, and we'd probably last about 5 minutes in that and go back to our cigarettes and grog, basically. So, the acharyas, they have given us this wonderful opportunity. Therefore, today we offer special thanks to Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya, of course, was born, around about 400 years before the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he really set the ground. These acharyas, they actually set the ground for the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Sankaracharya, who appeared somewhere around about 700 AD, I think it was, something like that. His philosophy managed to, uproot the Buddhist philosophy and, sort of move that to some of the outskirts. And once again, within Indian Vedic culture, the Vedas took prominence. But then these acharyas, they very strongly, smashed to pieces these Mayavadi philosophies. And they prepared the ground within the hearts of people, and throughout India, so that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, that at least people were Vaishnavas. At least, there was that understanding of Vaishnavism, worshipping God, was very solidly there, with strong, philosophical understanding from the Vedas that was there. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could then just go to the next step. So, these acharyas that we wonder why they were teaching. They were giving as much as the people, in the development of consciousness, there is development of consciousness within our one lifetime, but the Supreme Lord, He is also working over many, many lifetimes, actually within many universes, and He has, these long-term plans. So He doesn't just, in the same way, for instance, when we're preaching, we have all sorts of different programs where we get someone who has no knowledge of Krishna, and we just, give them just the tiniest little taste. And even that, we're worried about doing that. Sometimes you're worried about saying Krishna at all, Maybe the first time, you talk about Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, and you try and say something and you're testing the waters, and then you can see that you say something and they start disbelieving and losing it and drawing away and thinking, sort of weird am I with here, and so gradually we sort of just make friends, and then gradually there are different programs and anhadas and bhakti vriksha and You know, then you throw them into the temple and you've got devotees walking around Tulsi tree with bald heads chanting Hare Krishna and that, and the deities and smoke everywhere, you know, freak out time. Actually, Sonia, you know, Srimurti, when she brought her mother, probably shouldn't tell these stories, but she brought her mother here many years ago and she just completely freaked out. She just completely freaked out. She told her. She felt so uncomfortable, right? It just completely. So then after that, she went out and went to some nightclub or something where she felt much more comfortable. It was a very good nightclub. It was quite a, you know, seedy sort of a nightclub. So, but she came here and it was just, God, you know, because what happened, she was supposed to meet Srimurti. Srimurti was a little late or something, so I think she ended up here by herself and there's devotees and Krishna and, you know, people are saying, and it was just too much, you know. So, you know, we're generally very careful the way we introduce Krishna consciousness. You know, we don't just throw them in at the deep end. And then gradually, you know, after a lot of purification, we can actually start talking about, you know, some of the basics. And then, you know, like we are so fortunate. We sit here and on a regular, you know, a daily occasion, we come and sit and hear Srimad Bhagavatam, these most confidential of confidential pastimes. We're so very, very fortunate. So, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the same way that over many generations, you know, he has prepared the ground for his appearance with these various acharyas. Even with Lord Buddha. Even with Lord Buddha was actually preparing the ground for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. Even Sankaracharya was preparing the ground for the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then these other acharyas, Madhvacharya, these Vaishnava acharyas, and then finally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared himself and just said, you know, he is, you know, everything like that. So we are very, very fortunate to be fixed up at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And, you know, we should, especially for those who, you know, get to travel to various places, and if you really see what's happening in a lot of other so-called spiritual circles or actual spiritual circles, you know, we are certainly very, very blessed. So I'll leave it there. If anyone has any comments or questions about any of that.
Thank you.
Any other
questions?
It's a always a bona fide sampradaya. Whether the followers are bona fide is another thing. I was talking with some devotees last night. We were discussing about Lord Kapila, which brought us on to the conversation of Lord Vishnu. And someone was mentioning how they, you know, when they went to India, that you know, certain sampradaya they worship Lord Vishnu and what have you. And, you know, I was saying that perhaps they're not quite following authority, and they were saying, you know, no, no, they're following authority. So I was thinking, well, maybe the authority is not following authority then. So they're following authority, who's not following authority? Because the ultimate authority, if they're worshipping Lord Vishnu, the ultimate authority is who? Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu, as we know, appeared as Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya has said that one should worship Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, you know, if someone is sincerely worshipping, you know, we are worshipping also Lord Vishnu, but somehow or another, by, you know, the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that, you know, he has allowed us to actually worship Lord Vishnu and to actually follow the, you know, Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu is telling us, you know, worship Lord Chaitanya, get involved in the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like that. So somehow, you know, someone is worshipping Lord Vishnu, but they have, you know, missed this principal incarnation of Advaita Acharya, which is only 500 years ago. You know, there's... there's some, perhaps, you know, they're not correctly following their process, or there's some speculation which by they're not picking up essential information. you know, they're not on track, and that's, you know, there's a reason for that sometimes. So, you know, it's a bona fide sampradaya, but as Srila Prabhupada points out in his books, that, you know, some of them are supposed to be worshipping Lord Narayan, some of them are supposed to be worshipping Radha Krishna, but they're not doing that anymore. They've changed. You know, now a lot of them, you know, worship Ram. There's nothing wrong with worshipping Ram, but they've actually changed the emphasis of the whole sampradaya's, you know, most worshipable deity to another deity, you know, and they're doing things like that. And then, you know, when you start making changes, you know, gradually things become lost. And, you know, that's why, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Krishna, you know, introduced the Bhagavad Gita again. Actually, when we were in Sydney, Jai Pitaka Maharaj was telling a story that amongst the Sri Vaishnavas, one of the, you know, very prominent in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya is the, what are they called? The Alvas. Right? They were the Alvas, the saints from the past, and they wrote very wonderful devotional prayers and that. So, you know, they have a mixture of, you know, the Vedic literatures, the Vaishnava literatures, and these literatures of the Alvas. So one of them, who is very prominent, who is a Vaishnavi, Andra or something like that her name was, in her writings, so she's very, very prominent, you know, the principal acharya within their movement. She says that one should, you know, chant the holy names of the Lord, go to the street, congregationally chant, take up the drum, take up the cymbal, go to the street and chant the holy names of the Lord congregationally like this. So when Jai Pitaka Maharaj was actually there speaking to them, that the, you know, this very prominent acharya, he was saying, actually you are following, we are not, but you are following the teachings of our acharyas. So, and that's actually becoming, amongst those who actually know their own sampradaya, so those amongst the Sri Sampradaya who know the real teachings, the real roots of the sampradaya, they're starting to see, yes, this movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's the real teachings, that's the real, you know, next step for our sampradaya. They're following perfectly what our sampradaya should be doing, like that. And within time, all the sampradayas, you know, they will literally take up the Sankirtan movement, because they will see that, you know, their teachings are being perfectly followed within the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. All the incarnations, in fact, are teaching about Krishna. I was actually reading that the other day, that, you know, I was reading about Lord Kapila, and he was describing that, you know, Lord Kapila's Sankhya philosophy is helping you to understand Krishna. You know, if you read Lord Kapila's philosophy, there's not a lot of mention about Krishna. But what he's doing is preparing the ground where you can understand Krishna through perhaps the next incarnation or whatever like that. So all the incarnations, because it's stated in the, they're teaching the Vedas, and it's stated in the Vedas that the goal of all the Vedas is Krishna. And this is stated by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, 15th verse. By all the Vedas I'm to be known. All the incarnations and all the acharyas are actually preparing the ground to understand Krishna. So, when one follows any particular incarnation of the Lord, expansion of the Lord, or any acharya, or any sampradaya, when they come to that point, they're actually getting the real benefit for what that sampradaya, for what that incarnation was ultimately meant for. Like that, to understand Krishna. That's, and that's what we're doing. But sometimes they miss that point and they stop a little short. And sometimes they miss the point completely and their activities become almost materialistic. Yeah. Any other questions?
It was also mentioned that the Bhagavad Gita describes that each of the four acharyas of the four sampradayas, Nimbarka, Vishnu, Swami,
Right.
And
yeah.
That's why we've got darshan and gauranga.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mahaprabhu said to them, don't teach like Radha Krishna worship of the highest worship because I will teach that.
Right, yeah.
So
he's
one of them taught, you know, according to what Mahaprabhu said.
That's right, yeah.
Actually, he's one of them as a devotee of gauranga.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because was it Nimbarkacharya? He was meditating in Mayapur, and Lord Shiva appeared to him, and told him that over there the four Kumaras, you go and take darshan with them. So he went. They gave him mantra. He meditated, and then Radha Krishna appeared before him, and then Radha Krishna then appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said that later on that he will take the, you know, his essential teachings and also teach about Radha Krishna. And Nimbarkacharya later took birth within the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Keshava Kashmiri. Yeah. So and I think the various, I'm not sure who the other ones were, but they all took birth within the, they actually took part in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement themselves, which is known to us as known to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is not known to them. So, you know, their acharyas were actually, they were associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah. And they took part. You know, that's the ultimate teaching, but their followers don't always know. Yeah, that's a good point. Any other questions or comments? Jai, all glory to Prabhupada.